Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Welcome to Breaking Banks, the number one global fintech radio show and podcast with over 6 million unique listeners in over 177 countries. I'm JP Nichols. Finovate Fall just wrapped up in San Francisco, and with us today is Greg Palmer, VP of Finovate, to give us a recap of some of the major themes. Also joining us to share her perspective is regular contributor Theodora Lau, founder of Unconventional Ventures. We're going to talk about digital banking, financial inclusion and digital lending, and one of the themes that emerged strongly is that of artificial intelligence. So we're going to drill down on that a little bit more, including in the second half as Jason Henricks sits down with Einav Itamar, CEO and co-founder of Voca.ai. Just one conference announcement this week. If you're a senior leader with P&L responsibility from a bank or credit union who's looking for ways to create new sources of value or who's been tasked with building or managing an innovation function within their organization, then you really need to attend the BAI Innovation Summit, October 8th through 10th in Boston. Jason Henricks and I will be conducting an interactive hands-on session that will take you through an empirical approach to value creation designed to maximize results and minimize wasted efforts. We start with a series of strategic frameworks and lenses to help you pursue innovative ideas that are highly aligned with your strategic objectives. The result is a portfolio approach that balances the need to incrementally improve the existing business while also creating viable new options for the future. Find out more information and register at BAI.org. Well, let's get right into it with Greg and Theo. Well, Greg, maybe let's start with you with a high-level summary. What was Finovate Spring all about this year?
Sure. Yeah, no, it was a really good show for us. Always fun to be on the West Coast of the United States. And we were back in San Francisco after spending a couple of years down in Silicon Valley. And I think that was really refreshing for a lot of the companies who were on stage and a lot of the attendees who were there. We also saw, just in general, the show skewed a little bit younger in terms of the presenting companies that were up on stage. We had more early stage startups, more companies that were new to Finovate than we've had in a while. And I think that's partly down to getting into the heart of San Francisco. But that's really exciting for us as we get to see a variety of fintech that we haven't seen before. So, I think the biggest thing that I would say about the show was just it was really diverse. There were a wide variety of different types of solutions up on stage. And this is something that we've seen that's been taking place over the course of 2019 so far. Fintech seems to be in an area where people are kind of branching out. There are these core technologies like artificial intelligence that are now enabling people to do really impressive things. And at Finovate Spring, we saw a lot of platforms that used AI, but they were using them in very different ways towards very different goals. And I think that's something that's really exciting. When you have this technological capability, then people start to figure out how to use it, how to apply it towards some real problems. And I think we saw that obviously not just in AI, but in a variety of other places as well. But there were a huge number of different types of companies up on stage. And, I read a recap from somebody who basically had tried to categorize them into different buckets. And he got them down to 14 different buckets of our 60 companies there, which is really pretty diverse, considering at Finovate previously, you sometimes see a lot of companies from one subject area. And our best of show winners were also very varied as well. There were quite a few different topics that they were covering, different challenges that they were looking to try and solve. And I think that's something that really speaks well for where the industry is at right now. I think that's something that will really be good for the industry as a whole, and especially for fintech customers, people who are looking at fintech to solve real world problems. We're seeing some more real world solutions come out than we have in a little while. And I think that's very exciting.
Well, you've given us a lot to talk about there, and I want to come back and unpack a few of those things around the diversity. I do want to talk about the best in show winners. I definitely want to talk about AI. In fact, in the second half of the show, Jason Henricks sits down with Einav Itamar, CEO of Voca.ai, who I know is one of your best in show winners. But Theo, let me get your perspective first, just at a high level as well, your perspective as an attendee and as a speaker this year.
Yeah, so it's always fun to be back in Finovate, right? It's kind of like a homecoming, if you will, and love the energy in San Francisco. I mean, it's always fun. I agree with what Greg is talking about. Some of these companies, they do seem a little younger than some of the other ones. They're less mature. Although, with that being said, though, Greg, if I'm not mistaken, there were a few of those that are repeat winners. So that's always fun to watch. I have my favorites, and I like the fact that one of them is Invest Susu, and I like the fact that they won. Not to mention, it's a very interesting. They have an interesting background. The name, the founder explained it to me. Susu, it came from a tradition in Africa. And that's where she drew her inspiration from a social investing perspective. And not to mention that I think they just came out from the Venture Center Accelerator based in Arkansas. So all of that, you know, having a female founder, minority founder, doing something for a good cause and coming out from not your typical background, that's interesting to me. And the panel, I sat in a panel we moderated on financial inclusion, and that's always good. Good to see different fintech shows actually paying attention to using fintech for good and how we can increase the access to financial services for those who are not in it. We had a really, really good discussion. I think the only thing I'd say is I wish we had more time, but that's always the case, right?
Right. And that's, of course, a topic that we talk about a lot on the show as well. So of those things that you saw of the demoing companies, who really kind of fit the bill for you there in terms of financial inclusion? What new did you see?
So I didn't sit through all of them, but for the ones that I saw, Susu definitely was one that was interesting. Now there's Everplans. Everplans also one of the best of show winners. They're not new. I believe I ran into them quite a few times at Finovate. I wouldn't totally say, you know, technology for good, but what they're doing is they're fulfilling a need in the space, especially when more and more activities are moving to digital. We need to have a way to sort of organize all the information together, especially for the demographics that I'm interested in, you know, being able to have everything in one place for the family of care. I like that too. Can I also talk about one thing that I thought was interesting?
Sure.
Was there was a financial calculator towards the end, and that was intriguing. So, pro tips for anyone who's listening, who's planning to do the next Finovate demo: do not talk about grave. Talking about from cradle to grave might not be the most enticing thing to do in a demo.
Well. Yeah, that's a fact of life or a fact of death, I guess, to be more accurate. And if we're really going to be applying across all use cases, I suppose that comes into play, but I get what you're saying. That may not be so appealing. Well, you've hit at a couple of the Best in Show winners already. Greg, why don't you run through the list and give us a brief summary of who they are and what they do.
Yeah, for sure. I do just have to give a quick shout out to InvestSusu as well, because I actually encourage them strongly to come to Finovate Spring. I was really happy that they did well there and that the audience was very receptive to them. So that was one. You know, I'm not supposed to play favorites, of course, in my role, but that was one that I was happy that they did well. So, you know, the other winners that we haven't talked about yet, Arcos Labs was a really interesting one, talking about fraud and how to protect against fraud. And that was a really chilling demo where basically he, in the about 3 minutes up on stage, showed how easy it was to get a massive database full of login information and throw that at a bank's wall and just watch and see how many different accounts you could log into. So that was a very compelling demo, very scary in some ways demo, but obviously the scariness is what suited him well. They protect against it. BlitzPay is another one of the Best of Show winners. And it's a text-to-pay solution that you can pay by card, check, or cash. Again, a very clean demo, a very strong demo from that group. Blue Rush, who've been on stage a couple different times. This is their first win, but they have personalized video advice for financial institution advisors to help them, or not just advisors, but financial institutions and advisors to help them engage with their customers in a way that's easier for those customers to really feel like they're getting the attention that they deserve. Everplans, which you talked about, Glia, formerly SaleMove, so they've rebranded and they continue to do very strong demo, and they are slowly climbing the chart of the all-time best of show leaderboard there. They're getting up into the same type of rarefied air that is occupied by Dynamics, MX, and eToro in the all-time winners list. And then the other one we haven't talked about was Neener Analytics. And this is another one that I think could be thought of as kind of that financial inclusion type of play, just helping banks say yes to customers who are FinFile or NoFile customers using a lot of different social media analytics that can help analyze risk outcomes. And I think one of the things that I saw as well, talking about this financial inclusion question, is I think the presenters at Finovate Spring did a really good job of explaining more what's in it for the financial institutions that engage with them. You know, this is not something which is a charitable play in these cases. This ability to reach out and engage with these pools of customers that are currently being unserved or underserved is really a massive opportunity. And so partly I think the technology is getting better, and also I think people are doing a better job of explaining its worth to the folks in the room and helping them really see the value there, that obviously it is good for the individuals, good for the communities to be able to have access to these services, but it's ultimately good for the financial institutions themselves. And I think that's a message that is starting to resonate, which I'm really happy about as well.
Well, that's an area that I think when I look back over the past, it was an area for improvement for a lot of fintechs, right? They had a really cool idea around some potentially very cool technology, but applying it, number one, to a use case, and number two, to a set of gains for a financial institution if they're looking to partner with financial institutions. Sometimes that was missing. So that's good to know that, I suppose, the market's maturing. People are kind of understanding the product market fit, both from the consumer side, but also from the partner side. And, that I guess that's a good thing. Now, you also had four streams organized around digital banking, digital payments, digital community banking, and digital lending. Talk a little bit about what was going on within those streams, Greg.
Sure. So one of the ideas of Finovate has always been that we want to try and focus in, have a main stage experience that shows you a very diverse group of financial technology solutions. You sit there, the channel changes every 7 minutes, and you get to see, a pretty complete snapshot of where the industry is at. We've since started adding on the summit day, not just the summit day, but this additional day of content where we can break it down into a little bit more of subcategories and let people get a deeper dive there. So, the community banking stream is one that I was happy to be able to add this time as well. It is a really big topic, and it's something that, the way community bankers engage with fintech is necessarily different from larger financial institutions. And we wanted to really explore those challenges in depth, and some of the solutions that people have come up with there are very creative. There are definitely success stories to talk about, and we really wanted to kind of highlight that area specifically because it is such a unique aspect. So that was kind of the thinking behind that one. And then the other three are really, digital banking, digital lending, and digital payments. These are letting people kind of just split into the category that suits them the most. And I think the digital lending stream, one of the ones that kind of continue this conversation, we've talked about alternative credit scores is a really interesting one. How can you use big data, use artificial intelligence to broaden the number of customers that you can safely and confidently lend to? I think that was a really special one. I think the digital payment stream, how new technologies, new competitors will solve payments pain points. This is another really interesting one. The way people pay for things is constantly evolving, and the way consumers want to pay for things and the way they're able to pay for things is always changing. And from my perspective, the way that consumers say they want to pay for things and the way they ultimately end up paying for things is a little bit different because they don't always even know the options that are available to them. And so this sort of what are people doing now and what do we think people will want to do in the future? That future facing one is really interesting question to me because there's not a lot of data that you can choose from. you kind of have to look at human behavior and make an educated guess. And I think we're seeing people who are, you know, starting to be proven right with some of the guesses that they've made over the last couple of years. I think it's going to continue to be a hot topic. So I think that's one where we'll see a lot of activity as well. And then, you know, digital banking really isn't one that needs a huge amount of additional explanation. Obviously, that's something that's been a really hot topic in fintech for quite a long time now. But we are coming to an inflection point there. And I think, you know, Dan Lattimore is you know, someone who I always enjoy hearing and getting his analyst perspective on what's the next phase of the digital banking revolution. I think that's another really interesting one as well. So, you know, it does seem like we're at a crossroads. And again, looking at what is going to come next, what people want to do, what they say they want to do now, and what they end up wanting to do once they see what their options are, may very well be two entirely different things again.
Well, you're really talking about some important things, but I want to talk about something important too. If you guys haven't heard about Rhone, you're really missing out. Rhone, R-H-O-N-E, just like the river in Europe. It's a men's performance lifestyle and premium activewear brand that's engineered for unparalleled quality and comfort. They're an absolute necessity for guys on the go. It doesn't matter if you're training at the gym or jumping on an international flight, Rhone is your new go-to men's clothing brand. Rhone makes something for the modern man regardless of the occasion. In addition to an awesome selection of premium shorts, shirts, tank tops, socks, swimwear, shoes, Rhone engineers clothing perfect for the office, long flights, and commutes. And now Rhone has just released their amazing new commuter collection. Perfect for looking great and staying comfortable at the office, Rhone's commuter collection is the performance alternative to the everyday workwear. They have everything from pants, polos, shorts, and shirts that are all lightweight, comfortable, and wrinkle-free. The commuter collection is good for all weather, anytime, from a weekday in the workplace to a weekend barbecue. Go to Rhone.com and use promo code FinTech to get 20% off your first purchase. That's R-H-O-N-E.com and use promo code FinTech for 20% off. Rhone.com, use promo code FinTech. Well, Theo, from your perspective, what do you think is coming next?
Well, I echo what Greg say, but I think the other interesting area that we didn't see being talked about a lot, which I think will be the next hot and coming item, is gig economy. Right. So if you think about, you know, some of the stats that's coming, you know, obviously more and more of the people, myself included, are one of the gig workers. And I think one of the latest stats I saw is 35% of full-time independent workers are boomers and above. And so if you think about the demographic change, right, the fact that there are more people doing gig work and then there are more older people doing gig work and the needs that they'll have around that, I don't believe in the formal financial services. That's what we're looking at right now. And I think that's a huge miss. And Jacob touched upon that in his All-Star Analyst panel, which is always one of my favorite things at Finovate the last 2 years, is I think he mentioned, he counted the companies that were demoing, and there was maybe a handful, less than two or three, that was actually looking at that area. And that's a huge miss. And hopefully we'll see a change in the next 2 years.
Jacob Yeager. He always has an interesting perspective. Yeah, the gig economy continues to rise. And I think you're right. The financial services approach to people that are making a living there is definitely lagging behind. Everything from how often they get paid to the way they need to pay their expenses, the way they need to accrue for taxes. There are a lot of opportunities there.
Absolutely. I can tell my own personal story, right? When I started my company, it took me 3 weeks and three visits to the branch to get my small business account set up, even though it was a bank that I had my personal accounts for, you know, 20 something years. And then the latest discovery, which I shared a little bit on Twitter earlier, was when I had to pay myself, I realized that I couldn't transfer funds electronically from my small business account to my personal account. And I called the call center and they said, well, yes, but you can write yourself a check and deposit the personal account. And by the way, the personal account, there's a limit as to how much you can deposit. So you can write yourself a check and head off to the branch and deposit it.
Oh, welcome to 2002.
Exactly.
2009 when I started Finigate. That was where we were. I told this story from stage as well. You know, this is Jim Breeny, online banking report, been in business for many years. And he was paying me with handwritten paper checks because that's where we were at after he'd been in business for, you know, however many 15 years, I think, at that point.
Oh, don't get us started.
A decade on. And then, we can do this all day long. We can go to, you know, you kids get off my lawn and go super old guy about this. But,
it's not just super old guy. The reason I said don't get us started is because Jason and Brett and I all have our own share of frustrations about trying to do our own banking here. And speaking of the bank perspective, let's go back for a moment on the community bank track. So it seemed to me, both from social media and some of the banks that I know and work with, that you had some first-time attendees here from some community banks. Was that, number one, is that correct from your perception? And number two, is there something in particular you did to drive that, if so?
Yeah. So it is something that we wanted to do. And I looked at, you know, the historical attendee list at Finovate and realized that there was this big hole in terms of who we were attracting, this community banking group. And so we made a targeted effort to reach out and engage them with partnerships with the ICBA. I actually went and spoke at their convention in Nashville in March. We tried to offer, you know, make the show more accessible to community bankers, because if you look at where the industry is, I think that community bankers are in a really unique position as it relates to fintech. And in some sense, it's a somewhat vulnerable position, I think. And so we wanted to help that community see that there are a variety of options out there that are accessible to you. And on the flip side, you know, when we look at some of the big success stories from previous Finovate, those Finovate companies who have gone on to become really big names in the space, in a lot of cases, it's easier for them to engage with a smaller bank or credit union early on in their life cycle. And that can give them that kind of real world data, that real world experience. You can learn something with a smaller financial institution. You can move more quickly with a smaller financial institution. And then taking those learnings and that experience and getting yourself ready to make the leap into a bigger type of financial institution. So it looks from our standpoint like a really big win-win to engage the community bankers and show them there's this tech that's available for you that you might not have heard of. From a presenter standpoint, introducing them to this community who is in many instances really hungry for new tech solutions and ideas for how they can grow. So it was very intentional on our part to reach out to that community. And we put the community banking track together for that reason. And to be totally candid, it wasn't something that was, a massive growth opportunity for us so much as it was just kind of looking at the market and thinking this is something that's really needed and really necessary.
Well, I would agree with that from my perspective. I think that it does cut both ways. On one hand, we've never been in a better situation to be able to partner with amazing technology at a relatively easy process and easy price relative to, you know, building this inside your own four walls. And at the same time, this is a group of banks that could be the most vulnerable because of the digital arms race that's already going on in the industry, and the large players have been investing tens of millions of dollars in this. And so I do think that that tide has turned a little bit. I know even just when I'm out in the market or if I'm speaking at a conference, I hear a lot less kind of skepticism today about, oh, I don't know about fintech because we understand the banking business, we've been doing it 120 years. And I hear a lot more of, no, we know we need to do something and we're looking for the right way to get started and looking for the right partner. So I do think that's a win-win. I mean, Theo, did you see that in your time at Finovate this year?
Yeah, I do. There's definitely, I think, more talks of, you know, needing to do something. And we both love Jill, right? And so the fact that, you know, she's around and
Jill Castilla.
She has a great success story. I mean, it's just fascinating.
Well, she does have a good story and she tells it well. And I know she was excited to be at Finovate and on the Finovate stage. And there are others. I mean, there are, I think, a lot of untold stories of not so large banks that are doing some pretty cool things. And I think that those ranks are growing every day. And I think that's a very good thing for the industry. Well, Greg, you also, you mentioned very quickly the summit day. That was focused on AI and customer service this year. kicked off with a keynote from our friend Dave Birch called How Artificial Intelligence Will Transform the Financial Services Industry. And Dave's been talking about that for a long time. What were your impressions, well, both of you, out of the summit day, and particularly around AI, given that's something we're going to talk about more later in the show?
Sure, I'll jump in there. So I think AI is getting to a point, as I mentioned at the outset, where it's becoming a crucial piece of technology underpinning a lot of different types of solutions. And the question of how artificial intelligence will transform the financial services industry, I think the answer is that it already is transforming it. And the changes are happening. And if you look at the presenters that came on afterwards, you start to see it being used in a variety of different ways. I think the piece that I liked about that as well, Jason Mars from Clink, who was involved on that day, and Clink is one of the first companies that we had on the Finovate stage really talking about AI, but his making AI walk the talk, I think, is that's, I think, kind of the crucial step. It's now at a point where it has to deliver something useful. It has to generate something that really solves a real problem. And I think that's the really crucial step there. And so what we wanted to do with that AI summit was to help people kind of make that transition and take AI out of the theoretical and into the practical by giving some success stories, giving some ideas of how you can use that technology to actually make a difference. And you talked about Voca AI, who you'll be talking to in the second half of this episode. And that's, I think, a really amazing example of somebody who is doing that very well with artificial intelligence. And I won't try and tread too much on, I know you're going to talk about that a little bit later on, but if you listen to how that machine works and how it interacts, it's AI that doesn't sound like AI. It's really smooth. It's really seamless. And that's why they've been able to win Best of Show awards in Hong Kong, London, and now San Francisco in their first three Finovate events, which is extremely impressive because they've found not just a way to make it really cool, but really functional and really solving a concrete problem. And I think that's where we're really hoping that summit day would kind of help people to think about AI in that way.
I agree. Their demo was really, really slick. I mean, it caught me by surprise. I'm like, oh my goodness, it sounded really real. And didn't Clink just raise a big Series B, right? $52 million, if I remember?
They did. That's right. And Greg, I agree. I was onto them fairly early as well and thought they had some pretty good ideas a while back. And I couldn't agree more that this idea of focusing on some real-world use cases and solving problems that customers actually care about is very important. And so clearly, it looks like they're doing that and getting some market traction to be able to raise that kind of money in their Series B.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the data piece is also crucial, right? That in order for machine learning to work, you have to just feed it epic amounts of data. And so they're tied hand in hand. And figuring out the right data to feed it is another really big challenge for a lot of companies because you can train your machine to do the wrong thing if you're not careful. And so looking at that equation too is something that I think is pretty interesting.
Well, Theo, you've talked about that and written about that in the past too. What are some of the parameters? Because, garbage in, garbage out, that adage has been around for decades now, and it's maybe never been more true now that we're in the age of machine learning and artificial intelligence. What are your thoughts around how do we make sure that we train the machines in the right way?
Yeah, and full disclosure, I actually advise two startups that both of them, they do use AI and in the fintech space. So I think what you're saying, it's very true, right? It's you need to make sure you have a copious amount of data and also to make sure that there's no bias inherent in the data, which I think that part was much harder because there are things that is just, if you feed it data and data historically speaking, there are a lot of things that are biased towards certain social demographic backgrounds, if you will, right? Just like how autonomous vehicle, I believe that there was a recent study that was being done by Georgia Tech that demonstrated that somehow the autonomous vehicle ends up misidentifying or not being able to identify people of color. And so ends up, having a high incidence of accidents. So
was that because it didn't have sufficient data?
The data was not diverse enough, right? And so if you feed the data of lighter skin, people. And when you
that's
see
dark skin,
right, exactly. So you mistaken as a shadow or a tree or whatnot. So that was one of the topics that's pretty much talked about a lot when we talk about AI and biased data. So those things, we need to make sure that, you know, we treat it with care. But here's the thing though, right? So I am a big believer of using technology to enhance our financial well-being and to make things easier, especially now our financial lives are so much more complex. But from a financial institution perspective, I am not totally sure if all of them are ready to jump all in. Because a lot of times when they talk about, oh, we're using AI, we're testing AI, it almost feels like they are, you know, dipping their toes in a little bit and doing something that is very rudimentary, such as, you know, call center and stuff like that. Whereas there's a whole suite of financial services and transactions that they could be doing, for example, using AI to identify fraud, and all of those things, more things that we could do that for some reason we are not there yet.
I think there's just so much human nature is that we have built these systems and we've trained our people, and it's really scary to kind of let go and have a machine now take this. I think fraud is an area where I'm probably seeing the most acceptance into that. And this starts to bleed in now to digital lending, which is something we talked about earlier, that hardly any banks are very interested in a black box that says, oh, don't worry, we'll make the lending decision for you. So I think you're right. People are taking it on a step-by-step basis. Well, before we run out of time here in the first half of the show, Theo, any closing thoughts about Finovate or anything else that we've talked about today?
No, I think it's a wonderful show. It's always good to be on there. I would love to see heading more into direction of, you know, missed opportunities, right? How does financial services in general, how do we shape our industry to meet the needs of the invisibles and people that, you know, we don't typically think about?
Well, I think one thing I just wanted to highlight, which we didn't really talk about, but one of the things that we do before the event, I do a lot of demo coaching with the presenters. And for anybody who's planning on being at a future Finovate, there's a very clear pattern. The people who prepare the most do better demos. All of our best of show winners are people that I know spent massive amounts of time on their demo. And from that standpoint, I think it's really great to see people putting in that energy, putting in that effort, and you see it up on stage in the compelling 7 minutes that they're able to do. So, you know, we talk a lot about the different solutions that are out there. The messaging, the way you deliver it is extremely important as well. I wanted to just make sure I got that in there because we will see more companies coming up in the fall. We'll have a brand new slate of presenters. And if any of them are listening to this, put in that work. I promise you, you'll be happy with how your demo goes. And Theo, very happy to have you on stage as well. Thank you for joining us.
So Greg Palmer from Finovate and Theo Lau from Unconventional Ventures, as always, thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks.
Thanks for having
us. Pleasure.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag #BreakingBanks. Now, back to the program.
Excited to have Ainev Itamar, CEO of Voca.ai. And now, correct me if I'm wrong. As far as I know, Voca is the only company to win Best in Show for Finovate on 3 different continents. Is that right?
That makes both of us, as far as I know.
Well, I'm curious. We'll get into your Finovate journey in a little bit, but tell us about the concept behind Voca. What did you set out to solve when you created Voca?
Yeah, okay. Well, that's a great question. So I have a vast history with artificial intelligence and machine learning. Mainly it came from a passion since I was a kid, actually, you know. But following my my postgraduate studies at the Technion, which is basically the MIT of Israel, I did my research in machine learning. Actually, before it was called machine learning. So it was around natural language understanding. And back then, there were many different methods, but one of them was actually to use examples for machine translation. So that was my first encounter with AI, if you will. So following my research, following my studies, I co-founded a computer vision company called Corrigan. So we developed a very cool technology that allowed you to identify products, fashion products mainly, in images, and then connect them to, you know, to e-commerce websites like eBay or Amazon. That was also a very interesting journey of 8 years. Well, in the middle of this time, the deep learning revolution changed everything from the technological point of view. That eventually led to a successful acquisition of Corrigan by eBay in 2016. So following the acquisition, I asked myself after this journey at Corrigan, what is going to be the next revolution that deep learning is going to do? What is the next disruption? And it was very clear that the big companies like Amazon, Apple are putting a huge amount of effort in making voice sound and feel natural. So, and it was also clear that there is a lot of room for disruption in this area. So then I met Dr. Alan Becker. He's the other co-founder and he's also the CTO of Voca. And both of us had the same passion of, you know, solving this holy grail of AI that is actually, you know, the Turing test, building a machine that could mimic the human behavior in a way that would be so seamless that you could not differentiate between human and AI. So that was how Voca was born. This was our initial passion. We were not sure if we will be able to achieve this goal. We were not sure how long will it take and will people, if people are going to adopt this, but we were definitely sure that this is something that we have very strong passion and very strong dedication and capabilities of doing. This is how Voca idea was, you know, conceived.
And are you focused exclusively on financial institutions or are you industry agnostic?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the core technology of Voca is basically building an artificial and conversational AI, or a human AI, actually, that could be both natural and empathetic and creative. So if you take those three ingredients, and we actually believe that we built something that is very unique in this field of the voice AI, then we can definitely say that you could use this in for vast majority of use cases and verticals. On the other hand, when it comes to making it very successful AI solution, and we definitely believe in solutions rather than platforms. So a part of a successful AI solution is understanding the customer, understanding the use cases, and getting the right data for the AI to train, and building the right customer journeys, the right flows, and the right use cases to make this successful. So we thought what would be the biggest benefit would be for our technology. So we decided to go on the contact center market. And within this market, the largest chunk is definitely financial institutions. It's actually 29% of the entire contact center market is dedicated to financial services. So this was leading to our decision to focus on this vertical.
Yeah, I'm curious about something you just said, because I think this is a little bit like a spiritual or political debate. You believe more in solutions over platforms. Can you break that down for us?
Yes, of course. This is from an entrepreneur point of view. So, you know, in 2019, if you want to be successful in, you know, in building a startup, at least this is what I believe, you cannot be, you know, build like a generic AI platform. You know why? Because basically this is what Google and Amazon and Apple are going to do. And they have tons of resources to, you know, to crash you down. So in order to provide a competitive advantage in this environment, you have to do something that they are not, you know, that they are not focused in making. Again, for me as an entrepreneur, this means building a solution that includes the AI as a core part of it, but is also focused in a vertical or use case in order to make it more successful than a generic platform. So this is why we decided to focus on financial services and provide a solution, an end-to-end solution for building a successful user journeys for customer service and the customer acquisition.
So that's a great breakdown. What user journeys did you focus on first? Where did you find within the financial institutions that they were feeling the most pain that AI could uniquely solve?
Yeah, so I think that there are many, many different use cases for financial services. First of all, we can break down the financial services, I would say to banking and insurance. Obviously, in banking, you can look at investment, you can look at credit cards, you can look at loans. We specifically have support to many different use cases around all of these areas. One of the major use cases that we demonstrated at the last Finovate was for lending, for loans, B2B loans, for customer acquisition. So we demonstrated how Voca would help to streamline and optimize a flow of submitting a loan application by simplifying the process for the user. And by making it in voice, you make the experience more seamless and more interactive. And so if the customer would have some sort of worries about exposing some sort of financial information, so he would be able to get answers to his concerns as opposed to filling in an online form. So we also demonstrated support for a collection use case, for authentication, for customer service, for customer retention, upselling, cross-selling. So for all of these use cases, we already support. And obviously the simple ones as well, like balance queries, transactions, and so on.
Yeah. So I'm curious, how do you go about training an AI bot to be empathetic and creative? I don't know that anyone has brought up as part of their differentiation on the show before the idea of AI and empathy. I'd really love to understand that better.
Yeah, great. So first of all, if you got a chance to listen to some of our calls, then you definitely understand what it means. And maybe I can send it off, offline for you to maybe to also play it as part of your podcast. That would be fantastic. Just to try to explain, when it comes to taking a part of the user journey and replacing it with a machine, basically, you want to make sure that you provide an experience that is at least as good as human. So first of all, you want to be natural, but this is not enough, okay? Because people are, at least some of them, are empathetic. And this is very important when it comes to any customer interaction. You want to make sure that you read between the lines, that you understand the customer's emotional state. And you also want to make sure if you have some goal for the call, okay, for instance, when it comes to loan application, okay, or loan qualification, you have a very well-defined goal, a very well-defined KPI to get the customer to fill in the form and to get him to apply. If it comes to a use case like collection, okay, so you have a very well-defined goal. You would like to get the customer to find some sort of a settlement, whether it's a partial payment or installments or whatever that would work in order to prevent delinquency. And again, you have to make it in an empathetic way. So we have built an engine that could take your historical call data and digest it and actually learn what is the best way to interact and to move people into action. And this is the creativity part, to take millions of customer interactions, of past customer interactions, to see what works better and what does not work, and also to personalize, to see what works on women, what works on men, and what works on millennials and what works on baby boomers, and to actually personalize the experience. And this is actually the creativity part. This is what we are doing as human beings. We are adjusting our pitch. We are adjusting every different aspect of our pitch in order to get to the desired result and also in order to reflect and to improve the empathy in the conversation. And this is achieved, as I mentioned, first of all, by digesting historical call data and automatically feeding the deep learning engine that we have built with those calls in order to map the ideal conversation graph and to personalize it. And the second part of our technology that allows this empathetic and creative part is an algorithm that we have developed that is called speech to intent. The speech to intent is basically the ability to take all the information in the speech, and instead of transcribing it to text and then trying to understand, we do it end-to-end using neural networks. We're doing it end-to-end based on the agent previous question. So just to provide an example, we are right now in a collection call and the agent would ask, would you be able to, what would be the best way that we could help you sell this debt, okay? So in order to understand what is actually the best way, you sometimes have to read between the lines. The words are not enough. So if you would take speech-to-text engine and would then try to analyze the text and understand what the customer is trying to say, then you are missing a lot of important emotional information, and you would definitely miss, stress or happiness or sarcasm. So very important in order to choose the right response or to generate the right response.
So are you actually baselining in the call, like, you know, really measuring kind of the emotional baseline for a customer and how it changes over time? And do you have like a broad database that you can kind of score people in that regard?
This is not that actually the way that we are doing this. It's more like proprietary information, but basically just to provide a generic idea of how we are doing this, we are training on a lot of historical data that aligns with speech utterances to intents, to human intents. So those would map not just the emotion, but would map also the text and also other information like the pauses in the call. And the goal that we are providing for the network, for the neural network to decide is whether the intent is X or Y or Z. That is the actual goal. And in order to achieve this goal, the network would take the historical data, and the data is provided by speech rather than by text. This is one of the differentiators that we have provided.
Very interesting. The pauses as an indicator is pretty interesting. Are there other things? I know a lot of it's probably proprietary. Are there any things that actually connect to that causality and intent versus outcome that surprise you? Like I think of Spend out of Africa, discovering that if they're doing lending based on if you let your phone fully discharge, you're actually a greater credit risk, right? Things that you wouldn't have expected that match up. Have you found anything in the conversation that is unexpected that you're like, wow, wouldn't have thought that was a leading indicator?
Yeah, actually, one of the cool stuff that we have found is that sometimes using native accent, we actually expected and we have actually built a platform that allows Voca to sound with the native accent for every different, state or, English American accents. Not just US, but, many variants of US, many variants of Asian, many variants of Indian, and obviously UK and Australian and so on. But what we have found after, this effort, that sometimes the results are achieved, the better results are achieved if you actually use a foreign accent. So, for instance, we found that for UK customers, using US accent is actually better than using UK accent. And this was actually very surprising for us.
Is there any universal accent that is, most likely to be received? I would think there'd be something like, Brett and the Australian accent. Have you found, is there kind of like the end all be all? Do people find these to be the most helpful if it's this accent?
No, actually, that's the whole idea of Voca, that there is no one single answer. We are, as I mentioned earlier, we are very good at personalizing the response. So even if we decide that generally speaking, let's say based on your example, an Australian accent would be ideal, we would still benchmark this for different audiences. So we would benchmark this accent, you know, against different accent for many different audiences. We would test how it works for men, how it works for women. You know, maybe women prefer Australian accent, but men do not. So so this is a very interesting thing that is a part of our solution, actually, to have a platform that allows you to see in performance-based use cases what works best. So you would simply define, you know, the A-B test that you would like to run, and the system would optimize for different audience segments automatically. And the segments are either defined by, you know, implicit features, but they're also defined by data that we get from the customer, from the CRM data.
Fascinating. So if a bank wants to get started leveraging AI, and specifically you're using Voca, where do you suggest they start?
So again, there are many different places that we can provide value, but I think that a bank should ask themselves, do I want my people, my call center agents, to do repetitive and boring tasks, or do I want them to focus on what matters? So after asking this question, and after understanding that actually integrating bots would improve and reduce turnover and improve the overall customer experience, the next question would be, what is the number one use case that takes, what is the number one repetitive use case and boring use case that takes most of the time of my agents? So that is the place that, you know, as I said on the Finovate stage, this is the place where in 4 weeks we can show an amazing ROI on using Voca. So again, the answer for this question might be different for any different bank and any different call center, and it varies around the customer acquisition funnel and around the customer retention and collection and customer service. So there is no single answer. So again, we need those, you know, we need the COO to ask themselves, where do I spend most of my money, and what is the most repetitive use case that I spend the time of my agents on, and this is the place that we should start working on.
So that brings up an interesting point, that from a philosophical point of view that's getting debated with AI right now, is someone who's very deep into the space, both from a theoretical point of view and really understands where it can go, as well as its application. What are your thoughts on AI in the future of work as we know it?
Yeah, so it's always, I think, a question about new technology. There's always this fear, you know, that technology would take, you know, the positions or the roles of people. And first of all, I believe that, you know, to some extent, this is a true concern. But if you think about the long run and what technology has done to humankind, you know, all the different revolutions that happened in the past, you know, thousands of years. So you can't ignore the fact that technology is doing good to humankind. And again, in the way that we are trying to brand ourselves and to describe what we are providing, and also with the use cases that we are trying to target, we are trying to find use cases and we're trying to focus in use cases where it's a win-win situation, okay? So there are 20 minutes. If the customers are waiting 20 minutes on the line, then obviously the workforce that exists right now is not enough. So AI is not going to replace humans in this use case. It's just going to reduce the waiting times and improve the productivity, and in the bottom line, also improve the agent, you know, happiness in work, and will reduce the turnover. So that's one example for a good use case. Another example is with customer acquisition. So if, as a business, you are a growing business and you cannot handle your own growth, okay, and eventually you are just want, and again, the lending space is a good example, because the B2B and the B2C lending space in the US is growing rapidly, and we see a lot of alternative lenders and online lenders and so on. And we met a lot of these customers that can't actually control their own growth. So they would need help with the customer acquisition funnel to optimize it and to allow their own existing small call center to be more efficient. And this is another example that we can help a business grow and not, as you might think, would help to reduce the size of the call center. So we are trying to focus on these kind of use cases where AI technology can make a huge impact on a business and help it actually grow.
That's great. And so last question, again, on one of those trickier things to answer as it relates to financial services. How do you protect against unintended bias and the idea of, you know, being able to audit and have some level of controls around how the AI is performing as it evolves? What have you built in to prevent that kind of discrimination, unintended as it might be?
Okay, that's another good question. So people are sometimes, you know, imagine AI as some sort of a black and unpredictable box. So this is not the AI that we have built. We have built a solution that includes a set of intents. The set of intents, of human intents, is learned automatically from the historical call center data. But then the set of responses to those intents are pre-approved by our customers. So just to provide an example, there is no way for our bot to use some sort of, you know, bad language or to raise the voice or, you know, to insult a customer in any way, because all of the responses are pre-approved by the customer, by our customer. So this will also allows us to make sure that there is no, you know, bias or discrimination to a specific audience. I hope that answered your question. I'm not sure.
No, that was fantastic. And to, you know, one of the things I think we'll do is post in the show notes and on LinkedIn one of your demonstrations. If people want to learn more about Voca.ai, what is your favorite of your Finovate demos that they could find online, or where else can they learn more about Voca?
Yeah, so we have a YouTube channel that is always up to date with some new demos, videos, and other information. Obviously, we have a LinkedIn page for Voca AI and a website, of course. So the last Finovate demo that was in San Francisco two weeks ago, and yeah, we won the third time in a row for Best of Show. This is actually the best one, but I'm not sure that it's the video is online yet by Finovate. So I guess that in a few days, it's going to be online already.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for taking time and making the time zones work so we could chat. Very fascinating to see what Voca is up to, and look forward to seeing your continued success in the future.
Thank you very much. It was very interesting, and thanks for having me in this show.
Thanks to our guests this week. Please do join in on the conversation on Twitter. We always appreciate feedback, questions, and suggestions from our listeners. We are at BreakingBanks1 on Twitter. Or you can always email us at info@provoke.fm. Do you know why else you should reach out? If you're interested in sponsoring a show or a segment, our sponsors make the show possible and often provide really great content. Feeling antisocial? Well, that's okay too. If you like the show, give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform. Still want more? You can download and listen to more than 300 shows from Breaking Banks and our other shows like FinTech 5, Serial Entrepreneur, and Breaking Banks Asia Pacific with Simon Spencer, all at provoke.fm. That's all for this week on Finovate as we talk Breaking Banks.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.